Hello, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is April 26th, 2018, and I am your host, James Jones, for this episode 469 of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm joined today by Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
I was zoned out. Did you say 400 or 569?
I said 500, definitely.
Okay, good.
As the editor of this week's episode, no one will prove me wrong.
Good point.
I'm also joined today by Mr. John Lindemann.
I would like to say that April showers bring May flowers, James.
Why the fuck would you say that? What possessed you?
It's just, you know, you can't say it's not true. You know?
I don't know, John. We got snow in April today, so this month. So I could probably
say if not in the outside world, then in our hearts. Flowers in our hearts, James.
Are you going to come in here and read an email about Yoshi and Kirby eating each other now? Is that where this is going?
No. Maybe, but no.
He's going to read it. Greg is out watching Futility, known as the NFL Draft, and they got a quarterback. Good
Josh
job,
Allen,
Bills.
Josh Allen. Let's see what he does. Just stay off Twitter.
So, we are joined today by a person you might know, Dr. Jonathan Metz.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone. Thank you for having me back.
The former host of Radio Free Nintendo.
Yes.
Before we decided to descend completely into madness and get the Ouroboros emails about Yoshi and Kirby. Mm-hmm. What the fuck is going on in our inbox? This needs to be said.
My only response to that was we are never putting a public call out for email again, ever. I mean, really.
I'm learning that the internet is a dirty place.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't think this is sexual. I think he's just implying that they would create some kind of, like, recursive black hole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyway, all right, so video games. You listen to us talk about them, and we talk about them. So we're going to go ahead and just get onto it with new business, because unlike last week's train wreck, we actually have games to talk about. Mostly because we brought a guest in who has games to talk about.
I'm here to help.
Yes, which we need a lot of. So, Johnny.
I've got gaming thoughts just built up, ready to erupt. I got
gaming
Nintendo
Vesuvius.
Labo last weekend.
Ooh.
Yeah. I got the variety pack for a few reasons. I mean, I obviously like the variety. I like that there's more than one thing in it that you can do, and a varying level, so you can kind of, you know, try out different levels of complexity or depending on how much time you have. And the robot pack, I'm afraid, will not fit me. Also, right. I've played the game that's in the robot pack, and I didn't think it was that great when I played it back at E3 a few years ago. So I think it's neat. I bet it's really cool, and it's something that you'll play with one time and then stick in the closet. And I'm okay with that with the variety pack because, you know, for me, the piano is extremely appealing. When I saw the little Nintendo Direct video for it, I thought the piano was mind-boggling. So I'm currently building the piano. I'm like halfway through it. I've probably spent 2 hours working on it already. I'm definitely going slowly because I'm watching TV and movies while I do it. I'm slow with this stuff. You know, I think I'm getting faster as I go and I practice more, but the cardboard it's definitely really stiff cardboard. So it's high quality cardboard. It's folding hobby grade, you know, like it feels like it's a kit that you bought at a store, you know, and it's nice, but also there is something inherently fragile about cardboard, especially, like in a living room setting or near the kitchen where there's liquids all over the place, there's a dog running around. So I try to keep a close eye on it, and maybe I'm too deliberate with all the folds and everything, but the software that comes with Labo is the most impressive part to me. You know, the cardboard and the patterns that are in there, they're cool. They work well. They feel pretty sturdy. The tabs and everything are they tend to be pretty large. So that makes it easier to fold them, easier to insert them, but also they kind of feel like they can hold some load, you know, they're a little sturdy. But the most impressive part about it for sure is the software that comes with Labo. on a couple different levels. I mean, like, you've seen the, you know, all the customizing you can do, and some of the in the Discover mode, you can program your own toys and things like that. I saw someone do a Game & Watch, the ball game from Game & Watch, where he's juggling a ball from one hand to the other. They made that with Labo, and it's unbelievable. And they and because of the way Labo works, you can see what's happening in the like in the IR camera. You can view that. And so this guy had a video of that, and it's incredible what's going on in that little thing. So I love that the game lets you, it encourages you to dig in and see how these things work. You know, what's really going on under the hood. What are the different aspects of the technology that are making it work? Like on the little RC car, that's the only one I've really completed so far. And it's pretty fast, but it's really cool and it's fun to mess around with. And that thing, you can crack open the hood. There's a little button when you're playing around with that RC car that lets you open up, and it looks like you're looking at the circuit boards inside of it on the screen. And then there's dials you can slide up and down to change the frequency that the rumble works at, which changes the way the car moves around. And even if you don't quite get the construction entirely even, and I found that the car was trending in one, it favored left over right, you know, and so it was really difficult to make it go forward, straight. And I was able to adjust the frequency and kind of compensate for that partially. And it also makes different sounds. So, and then you've got the auto tracking mode in that one is just so cool, because you can put one of the little reflective stickers, almost said magnetic, but they're just stickers that are reflective, but you can put them on a piece of cardboard or your finger or whatever, and you can make the car chase you around, or you can lay out a track of reflective strips along the ground and like make your own little pathway for the thing. And not only that, I mean, it's really cool to see that it works, but on the screen of the Switch, you can actually see what the camera's looking at. I think this is some of the functionality that the Joy-Con firmware update includes, but you can look at the output from that camera and see what the Joy-Con sees, and it helps you understand what's really happening there. So, you know, as like Nintendo's maybe first big push into the whole like maker generation sort of game. I mean, I'm not saying this is their Minecraft, but I think this is their Lego, and it's an interactive Lego. It is a very Nintendo take on Lego, and it's really fun.
Nintendo told us it is.
Yeah, and I think it's a smart move for them. I'm enjoying it. For me, the appeal, the reason that I was willing to spend $70 or whatever, like, I don't know if that's a great price for this, but I think it's a really cool product, and I'm having fun with it, mostly in the same way that I would have fun putting together a Lego set, which I did recently. I got like a small one for a Christmas present, and I spent two or three nights putting it together, and it was like, it's very fun to do while watching TV. It's something to do with my hands, you know. It's something to help me focus and take my mind off of work or whatever. It's very similar to the feeling I get from playing video games. So
yeah,
Labo is not really a video game, but it kind of works in the same way. It feels like I'm playing a game as I'm folding the stuff and putting it together and then messing around with it.
Yeah, and it's just interesting and different, right? And it's something like, I feel like video games really get thrown into this bucket where it's just like, okay, well, a video game is Skyrim, and you're going to get another Skyrim, and that's what video games are. And that's what I like about it.
You're going to get the same Skyrim.
Exactly. Like, you're going to get a better Skyrim with 4K graphics, and that's what video games are, right? Like,
you're going to get VR Skyrim.
Exactly. You're going to get God of War, like the new one, though. Not the old one, the new one. So that's what I like about this. It's like, it's classic Nintendo thinking outside the box and just saying like, okay, well, what can we do to use video games as a medium for other types of creativity? So
you missed us in the lead up to the show where we were reading their financial briefing presentation, and they quoted people kind of semi-anonymously. It's like, it's a very Nintendo like toy. It's like, fuck you, Nintendo. I'm tired of your shit.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's something I get to say. That's not something Nintendo gets to say. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of like, this is a, and the thing is, this isn't, and we talked about this when it was announced, this isn't super outside the realm of stuff that exists in the edutainment space. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really neat ideas that if I was a kid growing up now, I would have been begging my parents for.
Yeah.
For their luck, there wasn't quite as much stuff back then.
It does show you how conservative the rest of the industry is, though.
Yeah, I mean that this is an idea that other people probably wouldn't have tried, but yeah. they go after different things. And it
Wonderbook, man.
I was trying to not say Wonderbook.
My goal was to never say Wonderbook.
You know
on
we're
going to
go right after
again.
Wonderbook.
The eternal font of Wonderbook.
Yep.
Oh God!
It's a reference that never goes out of style.
Eternal Wonderbook.
It never was in style, so it's easy to accomplish. Right.
I'll say that you know. Maybe Labo is not
the fucking
so different.
Eye of Judgment next.
Maybe, I think fundamentally Labo is not so different than things that other companies have done, including Lego. But for me, what makes it work well is the software itself is just really high quality, and that's obviously Nintendo's strength. So it makes sense. But going through the directions of it, I've been very impressed at how detailed, thorough, well paced. Well explained these instructions are. I mean, I'm not a hobbyist. I'm not someone who is like, you know, just I'm not an expert model builder or anything like that, but I've done a few of them over my lifetime and nothing I've ever used had instructions that are this good. And that's actually one of the reasons that I don't really like doing modeling because a lot of it is just, you know, it comes from China and it's poorly translated and it's very frustrating to deal with it. Having, you know, done IKEA furniture many times, I'm a chronic renter and, or a habitual renter, I should say, you know, living all over the US, IKEA is oddly satisfying to put together in spite of the sometimes vague directions that they give. And Labo has the benefit of using words to explain what you should be doing. So I think that's a strong, I mean, it requires localization, but it makes a big difference when these things are complicated. But the words are carefully chosen. I just want to add that the little video as it goes through and shows you where to fold and how these things put together, it not only, you know, do you advance it with forward and back, but you can zoom in and rotate it around and slide it for a better view of any detail that you might be having trouble with. And that's something that no paper manual can do. And it's very useful on occasion with, you know, as these things get more intricate.
Right. Cause it's all an engine. Like
it's a 3D model that it is, that's, it's manipulating to show you how to put this thing together.
In what might be the most, I don't know how best to describe it, self-defeating stream ever, Giant Bomb basically canceled UPF last week because they started a Labo stream like within like 2 hours before they were supposed to go live with UPF, not paying attention to the fact it takes like 4 hours to put the robot together.
Mm-hmm.
So that just became their stream. And there is a lot of just Nintendo-ish stuff in how those instructions are put together. Like how they start personifying pieces of cardboard.
Yeah,
like
of course.
Here's there was like one that was just like a wedge, and here's Wedgie. Don't forget to thank him before you plug him into the slot.
James, this is the company that like put arms and legs on a balance board. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what you would it is up to the standard that you would expect from Nintendo in terms of how this software tells you how to put together your cardboard toys. That you can tell that's kind of the most important part to them. And I think that's right. The right way to go. It increases the quality of the build experience greatly. The only complaint I would have about it, is that it's not audibly voiced, at least not that I found how to turn it on. And
I don't think it is. No,
I think for the nature of this task, an eyes free, you know, the ability to just listen to it, read out the instructions and not have to constantly stare at the screen and hold a finger on the screen. Some kind of, if not voice control, at least, you know, text to speech, to have them tell you what the directions are would be extremely helpful because you don't necessarily want to be looking at the screen while you're folding this cardboard. You want to be looking at what you're doing and focused on that. So I wouldn't be shocked if they add that, because it's an obvious criticism that I think they're going to get from a lot of parents who buy this for their kids, is that, hey, this would work a lot better if it talked to me. Because either my kid is totally capable of making these models but isn't a good enough reader to read the very detailed instructions that you provide, or you know, it's just too frustrating for someone to constantly go back and forth between reading what's on the screen and then back to looking at what they're doing.
Yeah,
it makes too much sense. You've already gone through the trouble of building all this stuff in there. It should have that feature.
I think. And I mean, voice control is getting – it's becoming more and more mainstream in other products as well.
Right. I mean, what was it? Personal Trainer Let's Get Cooking back on the DS. That had voice control for advancing your recipes. Now, that thing had a lot of problems with the way the recipes were sequenced that made them kind of frustrating to use, which Labo definitely is much better about. Being able to listen to the recipe for whatever it is you're making and then advance it with your voice, it is quite useful for these kinds of, you know, these things where you're working with your hands. But anyway, that's a minor gripe. I think Labo's really cool. I can't wait to finish this thing. I haven't had enough time to spend with it because it is quite time consuming to put these projects together, especially the complicated ones like the piano. And I'm down for that. I hope they will continue to release, you know, like updates to the game and new cardboard packs with just increasingly complex things, or at least ones that are just like big and, you know, really just really fun to put together. Something that you can sink your teeth into. I like that a lot.
I mean, obviously, they can't do voice advance because there's no mic on the Switch, but certainly they could read it out to you. One of the things that I was amused by is just watching the sheets come out is that there's Easter eggs in the cardboard sheets. Mm-hmm. They had in the robot, there's two that I observed. One, you can just punch out star coins that they just had extra space. They just put some star coins on it.
Yeah.
And then the other is their Stunna shades, cardboard shades, just in the punch out because they had some extra space.
Right.
The instructions never mention them. They're just there, and you can just pop them out if you want.
The initial instructions may not mention them, but there's some Easter eggs in the software as well. And if you build a project and then go back to it, like back in the play area, there's a series of tooltips that they'll give you that will point out little things that you might try. There's some videos of like, hey, you could make a racetrack out of this, or you could attach a reflective sticker to the end of the fishing rod and then use that to lead your RC car around an obstacle course. Or you could put it inside of a cabinet full of cups and things and then control it and make your own course and have a race in the dark because it's infrared.
There you go.
It's like the whole thing is endlessly clever. Like, they really thought long and hard about what makes this fun, what makes this cool, what would people want to do with it, what can we suggest to keep them interested in this process and in the product that you get at the end of it, which is a pretty cool, you know, 3D physical good that you made that does neat things that I certainly am not going to be throwing these in the garbage as soon as I'm done making all of them. I'm going to want to put them in a basket or something so that I can pull one out. You know, when TYP comes over with his baby, I had the little RC car out and we were kind of, you know, running it around, and he was very interested. He's too young to control it, but he was very interested in it. So, I mean, I think these are little things that you'll want to have out handy, and you'll want to show people, and they're cool. They're fun.
The download press release included a link to their Labo Creators Contest, which has three categories of best decorated Toy-Con, best Toy-Con mod using Toy-Con Garage, so it's existing kits, and then best just straight up inventing something original using the garage. It's neat that they're doing that, and they're going to take videos.
That's great.
I enjoy it. I think it came out Friday, right?
Yeah.
I enjoyed, because I stay up late on the weekend, like really late. And I enjoyed around what would have been like around noontime, maybe early afternoon Saturday in Japan. So it was late night here, Friday. Weird shit started to pop up in my Twitter feed from Japan. Like people doing things that are not Labo prescribed. And then when I woke up and it was, you know, it was like late morning on Saturday. And then about a couple hours later, I started seeing English language Twitter basically doing exactly the same thing. It was like just watching the as this people started to deviate spread. And some really neat ideas popped up. Not 100% convinced their prizes make a lot of sense, because if you win, you get the choice of a Labo kit, which you would have had to have already owned in order to perform your entry for this contest. But okay, Nintendo, that's fine.
Well, you get an extra. I guess you can share it with somebody. Or replenish your supplies and make another one.
Or you get a jacket that says Nintendo Labo on it, which, you know.
That's kind of cool.
Well, that's probably bad. That's probably bad.
I mean, it's no scarf, but it'll
no
do.
Fucking
Yeah, no, the garage is really the thing that pushed me over the edge of wanting to buy it, and I haven't even gotten to that yet. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm sure I'll never be able to spend the time it takes to do something truly, truly wild like the things with it that you were starting to see, but I definitely want to mess with it.
The programmer in me wants is like the it's the one thing that's making me go like
exactly
maybe.
Yeah,
but like I might get to the point of never even assembling the kits. Then it might just be straight into the garage to start screwing with stuff. That's, but I think you have to get access to it, don't you?
I think you have to make, you have to start making at least one of them. Maybe you have to finish at least one project. But the RC car takes 30 minutes absolute maximum. It's yeah. Not difficult.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's not. It's more like a Mario Maker. It's like yeah, the barrier to unlock all the stuff is so trivial that
yeah, do know, something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so this definitely I think captures some of the excitement of Mario Maker, where you really don't know what people are going to do with it, and it's exciting to see the variety and the inventiveness that Nintendo's allowed enough space that people can actually do this kind of thing, and they've encouraged it too. So I'm excited to see what comes out of Labo. I think they're definitely going to make more than just these first two kits, unless it's a total flop. And I'm quite curious to see what might come next.
Yeah, we're not going to know for a little bit how it's doing. Although actually, we'll probably get some read on it in a couple weeks when the first NPDs come out.
Yeah, and I don't think E3 is too soon for them to say, hey, you know what? There's more Labo coming. Here's a quick preview of some stuff that we're working on.
Especially because they've already shown things in that initial trailer that they haven't released.
Hmm.
The bird that they showed some person looking like a complete lunatic flapping around with is not in any of the kits, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was like a driving one. So, I mean, there's obviously stuff they have sitting on the shelf right now, ready to be put in a box, which is ironic because it itself is part of a box. But that's neither here nor there. Johnny, did you want to touch on something else
Sure.
in this one, or do you want to do it? Let's do another one. What do you want to touch on?
So I was recently on a trip and I got to play some Bomb Slinger. This was a recent Switch release that got a lot of praise from our site and other people. And when I watched a video of it and I saw that it is definitely an indie game tribute to Bomberman, like classic mm-hmm. Bomberman. I said, yeah. Okay, I can see why people, you know, I'm sure this is a better Bomberman than the Bomberman that's on Switch. And it has a battle mode, and Switch has two controllers built into it. So I would like to have the on-demand capability to play Bomberman multiplayer with someone on my Switch. And I now have that. I wasn't expecting that it would have an interesting campaign mode, but it does. It's a bit roguelite-y, so the level designs change every time, but the sequence and the bosses and the shops and things like that, they're pretty consistent. So there's some interesting story stuff to it. There's actually like a little short cinematic at the beginning that was surprisingly interesting for an indie Bomberman clone. And the camera takes a weird zoom in. There's an effect where the game is not as 2D as it appears to be, and I don't know that I could describe it very well, but there are scenes like when you go into the shops where the camera goes to behind the back of your character and it's suddenly in a very rudimentary third person view. It looks kind of like Tomb Raider on the PlayStation 1, and it's jarring. It's I probably gasped the first time I saw it.
Watched just watched a video of it, and what the hell?
It's really odd. And you walk in the shop, and it just immediately switches to this other view that you've never seen. And you're like, wait, what is this game? What's going on here? So I don't know what else. Bombslinger could very well keep surprising me. It's done it a few times already. I did get to try the battle mode a little bit with TYP, and maybe one of my family members recently too. They weren't too interested in it, but TYP and I played a few matches, and I think we both appreciated that you get multiple hearts in the battle mode, so you don't just die and turn into a ghost immediately. You can try a few times. I think there's only one character model, so everybody's just a different color of the main guy, and that was a problem for us because Mike has got some color blindness. And so he was losing track. And frankly, I don't think you have to be colorblind to just get easily confused. Some of the colors of the characters are too similar to each other. And they're all just kind of muted. The whole game has this muted color palette, which looks cool, but is kind of a problem in multiplayer where you need to be able to discern which guy is yours. So, but
well, the DLC, where you can become a creature from like Dracula or Belmont, like that might help.
Yeah.
Yes. If this was the Hudson spy or licensed game, but this is a different game.
This was a terrible attempt at a joke.
Yeah, it was.
Please edit.
Did they add stuff like that?
I will edit.
I was completely forgot with their horror. Yeah.
They added all kinds of weird models. Once they fixed that game in a lot of ways, they added a whole bunch of models to it.
Silent Hill is in there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, don't worry.
Pyramid Head is in Bomberman first.
Yep.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's odd.
I will edit that to give it a backing track so people can hear it and it draws all the attention.
That's the thing, though. I can respect that, though, because Guillaume, when he hits big. But if he fails, he fails spectacularly, and I can completely respect that.
I'm just really tired.
Sounds like they turned into YY bombing.
Why could I be tired? I don't know. We only started recording an hour late. And why? The listeners will never know. But it's probably John.
Episode 569, John was late.
Yeah, here we go.
You started it!
Guys. But yeah, Bombslinger is pretty cool. If you like, it is very old school Bomberman. So like, it has the problem of every time you start the game, you're really slow. Because you can only lay one bomb and it doesn't go very far. And it takes a while to build up to the point where, you know, you can kind of do two or three different things. You can get out of trouble. You can take out enemies without getting right up in their face. But the first few minutes of any Bomberman run are just, they're not as much fun. You kind of have to get up to you get over a certain hump and then you're kind of cooking with bombs, you know. And Bombslinger definitely does not fix that problem. It's sort of endemic maybe just inherent to the experience. But it's fun. It has all the classic power-ups good, interesting enemies. And also, sometimes you get a power that just lets you pull out a gun and shoot people. And the bullet just goes straight ahead of you. And it's a weird fit with Bomberman, but it makes sense because you're in the Old West and you're out to avenge your wife or something like that. It's a strange theme for a game like this, but I'm enjoying Bombslinger.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the right theme for a game where you just drop bombs behind you from an infinite supply is, so, you know.
Yeah, it's goofy. It's goofy, but this, like I said, the story is oddly serious and kind of moody.
Perfect.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think it's a little tough to play on the Switch joystick, on the Joy-Con. It has this grid pattern and the joystick doesn't click into the cardinal directions very well. And so it can feel a little sloppy playing with that, but I'll get used to it, I think. And I like that there's this kind of infinite procedurally generated campaign because I can just play Bomberman whenever I want and I won't get tired of it.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, we depending on time, we might come back to hear some other stuff that Johnny has, because he actually has quite a lot. But Guillaume,
yes,
what have you been up to?
Well, I went and got Graceful Explosion Machine. While it was on sale, it was 50% off last week, and finally I gave the game a shot. And I'm glad I did, because I kind of instantly became hooked, and I proceeded to trying to destroy the high scores on the leaderboards of all the people on my friends list, and I'm slowly but steadily kind of making it at the top of the leaderboards, the only ones that I care about anyway, not the worldwide ones where, you know, only crazy people can actually, you know, hang up there. But
are you toppling all of my fat scores?
Easily.
Ooh.
Yeah. But I've got, there's this guy who's not a listener of the show, I don't think, but on Twitter.
Not anymore after you finish this sentence.
No, but he was the one score that I couldn't beat on all the leaderboards. And then I actually looked up how to improve your score, and I'm gradually kind of unseating him, you know, on all these leaderboards. And I'm waiting until I've got some sort of I'm well ahead before I warn anyone of what I'm doing, so that, you know, I can enjoy this moment for a little bit before inevitably someone just handily,
you're a small man, Gil,
hands me my ass. I've never denied it. but it's a really fun game, and I didn't doubt that it was fun, but I was kind of surprised by how much I took to it immediately. Like, it's I guess I didn't really have access to a high score chasing game too much on the Switch. You know, I tried the pinball FX tables, didn't really do it for me. But this is exactly what I wanted. And I just like the simplicity of it. There's no kind of leveling up. You're not gaining levels or anything. You're not improving your ship. It's just like from the beginning, you've got all the tools that you need. You've got your standard pea shooter that doesn't, you know, that gets a, that basically only exists for when your special, your bar for your special weapons is depleted. And then you've got three special weapons, basically. They call it a sword attack, but it's kind of a shield because it's the only thing that can deflect projectiles. And it also kind of like, it does like this movement around your ship where it just destroys everything that's around you. So it's very, very handy when you're in a pinch. You've got these missiles that if you just press the X button, it shoots missiles all around you. It's kind of a panic button, but you can also hold down the button and hold a direction with the stick, your ship is going to be immobile, but you can kind of like direct a whole bunch of missiles one direction and, you know, destroy all the enemies in that general area, which is very handy. And the last special weapon is kind of this long range, the sniper weapon, which, you know, basically, like, you can only take out one enemy at a time with it. But what I found out when looking up how to get a better score is that, like, you really want to be chaining together kills using those special weapons. And the sniper weapon is the one that you want to use the most, because it's the one that's going to multiply your score the most as you kill a chain of enemies. And so you just hold down the button, and you know, once you've got a big enough group of enemies in front of you, just take them out, and until your bar is almost completely depleted. And from there, it kind of recharges halfway, but also the enemies that you kill leave these kind of energy dots behind them that disappear pretty quickly, and you have to pick them up pretty quickly. You have to be pretty close to them to pick them up, but that's how you fill up the rest of your special bar. And so
yeah,
you always
moving around the stage. So
yeah,
you can't
really
just plan it and just shoot things down.
Yeah, and you can't stay away from the enemies that you're shooting, because otherwise you're just going to run out of your special weapons all the time, and you're not going to get that high score. But at the same time, you're trying not to get hit, and you're trying not to let the multiplier timer go, because, like, in addition to a multiplier for a sequence of enemies that you kill with one kind of one use of a special weapon, you've got an overall multiplier that you can keep going throughout the level, throughout like three waves in a stage. And that's the main way that you get a decent score. But when you want to improve on that, then you want to use the sniper and kind of basically only use that for most of the game. Anyway, I got really into it, but the downside of falling immediately into the trying to be, you know, at the top of the leaderboards hole is that I'm not progressing very fast. It's a very short game. There's only like four worlds and nine stages in each of them, and they should be over pretty quickly, but I can't help myself and like just restart them over and over again. So I hope I won't, you know, I hope I won't get sick of it before I actually get to see like the second world. we'll see. I've kind of, it's tapped into my more, I don't know, not maniac, but more...
sadistic?
Yeah, I don't know. Just kind of unhealthily...
Score chasing.
Yeah, the score chasing, yeah, in kind of an
your
unhealthy
Billy
way.
Mitchell, you know, the Billy Mitchell part of your brain.
Except I'm playing this on
anything.
An actual
machine. You
mean
machine. The Steve Weebus part of your brain. That's what you mean.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, John. Yeah.
We know you make hot wing sauce in your free time. Don't hide who you really are from us.
And just ignore the fact that I've hacked my Switch using like that latest hack software. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my scores are entirely legit.
you mean a piece of copper wire, the latest hack software? Oh God!
So very quickly,
yes.
the other game that I played, I just tried the demo for Stickbold, a dodgeball adventure, just came out, and I was very unsure about that game. Like, we gave it a 7.5 on the Nintendo World Report, and it didn't seem from the trailer like it's one of those lifestyle kind of trailers where they show you a bunch of friends playing together and, you know, having fun on a couch. And it's just like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, I'm not going to have stickbold parties. I mostly want to see, you know, like, what the game plays like. And
I've been to some stickbold parties. Don't do that.
Were they on it's, a, it's more a lifestyle it's, than it's, just a party.
It's not what you think it is.
I see. Yeah. You put the dodgeball in the bowl. Anyway. In the footage that they showed of the
why
game...
Why does it always turn into this?
I don't know.
Stickbold parties, do it.
Yeah. What do you do in this demo?
Yeah, so basically, like, what I didn't know is that it's kind of... it reminds me of what I've seen of the trailer for... great job. I can't remember the name of that game. The pool game that Adult Swim is publishing. You know, it kind of uses the concept of billiards.
Pool panic,
yeah. So the kind of the physics, but basically, like, you've got these levels where you're wrecking havoc and, you know, just... anyway, so it's kind of the same principle here. You've got an adventure mode. If you're playing on your lonesome, you play with a CPU partner, but this is a two-player co-op game. And you go through the story where you're trying to become, you know, the best dodgeball team ever. And unfortunately, I don't know, the love of your life gets kidnapped or something. I don't know, by some dude coming from the ceiling dressed in a devil. It's really weird, but and it works better than, you know, you would think by just listening to me saying this right now. So... You go on this adventure, and the demo is very short. It's only, like, basically the opening tutorial, and then you take down some hippies who are doing something with honey. I assume the unspoken... Can you, like, I don't know, put pot in honey or something? Is that a thing? Because that seems to be what they're implying here. But
wait, can you what?
I don't know, like, infusing honey with pot, like...
I'm sure you can, like...
That
you
seems
can do
to
anything
be
with pot if you smoke enough pot.
I don't know.
I mean, there's the phrase honey pot, but I don't know.
That's
I, I don't think that's it. This is a Danish developer. So, I don't know. Maybe something got lost in translation. Oh. Or maybe the Danes just...
Yeah, who knows what goes on in Denmark.
They're just on the vanguard of flavored marijuana.
Why not? Those Danes.
You know, honey pot is a term also. Like, Winnie the Pooh has a honey pot. It's a pot full of honey.
That's what I was saying. Yep.
Sure.
It's also basically code for a trap.
Yes.
I see. You can catch bees and fruit flies with a honey pot.
All right. Well. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I was just thinking too hard about this, and basically it's only an excuse to throw beehives at hippies.
It's probably about marijuana then.
So it's got like this adventure element. You take out these hippies, and then like they go get their van, of course, and then they try to run you over, and you've got to avoid the van that's racing around the track while shooting like mushrooms at it. Yes, mushrooms, and it seems to be like this really wacky adventure, and the humor works for me. Like I think that anyone can download this demo and pretty much immediately see if they're going to be into it or not. Personally, Karen and I, like, we played the demo and we're like, yeah, okay, we're gonna put 15 bucks in this immediately, but the humor might not go, your mileage may vary. It's just this goofy, very kind of cartoony world, and the graphics are very simplistic. It's basically these kind of these boxy looking dudes, not Minecraft, but more Gravity Bone, which is a reference probably very few people listening to this get, but very simplistic looking characters, but the animation is really great. And I don't know, I just got a kick out of watching, like, in the opening, in the tutorial, like the newbie team that you defeat, like I find that the animators really captured someone getting smacked with a dodgeball in the back. It's very, very satisfying, and so that's one of the things that sold me on this game. So I don't know, like I'm gonna play more of it. Like I did download the full game. One weird thing about demos and full games. One weird thing about like the downloading a demo on Switch and then buying the game is that they're two separate downloads. I thought we were over that. I thought that we were in a glorious new era where you could download the demo that was also the full game and you could just unlock the rest of the game. But that's not the case. And the game is a full like gig and there's only 32 of those on the Switch. So I don't know. It's a little bit disappointing. I'm looking forward to Nintendo improving their whole system.
Just everything.
Well, yeah.
Just all of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're that eager, fair enough. All right. This is like, what do you mean improving the whole system? Just put an SD card in, man.
No, I do. But I mean, like, for people who don't, like, it seems to be...
I mean, it's mandatory, I'll be honest. For the Switch,
sure.
No,
I get that, but it seems to me like it feels like we've regressed in terms of demos and full games and whatnot. I'm pretty sure the Wii, you could just, unlock the anyway, whatever.
At least, if you decide to buy the game, you can delete the demo. You could delete the demo regardless.
Wii demos were even more antediluvian than you remember.
Oh, yeah, but I'm like Wii U, I'm pretty sure, had fixed that, but maybe not. I'm wrong.
Some demos were actual demos. Some were Nintendo's, like, free-to-start bullshit.
Right.
Which, speaking of phrases, Nintendo's way too proud for having coins that are actually terrible.
Hmm. Okay, we can move on from this. I guess that, on the 3DS, there would be separate demos and full games and...
Yeah, this is the continuation of that, and that's pretty much the standard for most games out there, unfortunately. I will go next. Actually, no, I'll go next.
You're ready to talk about Yakuza for only this one time?
All I'm going to say about it, because I'm actually going to talk about it for real when I'm done, is that's what I have been playing, and it is... It is amazing what when you dump an engine that's 10 years old for a new one, what you're able to do. huge strides in the engines in that game. So I'll have a lot more to say about it when I finish it up. I'm probably about a third of the way through at this point. And Saran, who's already played it, told me it's not very long compared to the other games, which are very long. But yeah, it's kind of what I'm working on right now. I have started, I mean, that's really all I can say about it. I've started Radiant Historia Perfect Chronology. Again, fuck Atlas for making the good art a paid DLC. Why would you do that? But they did it. So the original good art style you have to pay for. So we're not doing that. I'm not gonna pay the hostage taker. So we'll just roll on with this animu art and just, granted, it was still pretty anime before, but this is bad. This is trash. We'll just keep going and we'll just pretend like I don't see it. That's all I can do. John, you've been playing a little bit of games. What you got?
James, I would say I have a history with the Elder Scrolls games. I mean, there are certain games that I chase. A man can dream. I have dreams, James.
John, I think we all have a history with your history with the Elder Scrolls games.
I think this podcast is a chronicle.
Yeah. So
it is the most elder of scrolls documenting your attempts to play these games.
Well, I figured, I the phrase doubling down comes to mind with this because I picked up Elder Scrolls Morrowind for Xbox, well, original OG Xbox. Let's just call it what it should be called.
Fuck you, Microsoft. Like we haven't had to talk about this in about a year, but now that they've added original Xbox backwards compatibility, things are way more fucked.
So
you're playing Xbox One games on your Xbox One.
Let me just say that it would not be an Elder Scrolls game if I didn't have it for a console and already own it on PC, which I do. So I figured, why not? But I actually am playing it this time, which is fantastic. And it's interesting because it's remarkable. This is, I think, from 2002, 2003-ish. I think maybe the Xbox actually release might have lagged PC by a year, but regardless, it's from that time period. And draw distance wasn't really the cool thing back then. So,
we hated draw distance.
Yes, exactly. It wasn't really chic back then. It really became more de rigueur later on down the line. But
are you gonna fucking drop?
It's an interesting game to play simply because it's amazing how little the Elder Scrolls games have progressed. Even with Skyrim being what it is, they've streamlined a lot of stuff in it. But really, I mean, it's still kind of like a walking simulator sort of thing. And
send your emails to RFN at NintendoRollToPort.com. CC John Lindemann.
Exactly. But so it's not very different from Oblivion, that's for sure. I mean, if you want to sit there and you want...
It's basically just Daggerfall.
I have not played that, but by God, if they put it out on Xbox One backwards compatibility, I will buy it. I can tell you that.
at least once.
I will buy it at least once, possibly twice. But it's amazing because it's the same kind of thing where... If you want to, like, for anything like speechcraft or any of your characters, things like speechcraft or whatever, jumping, whatever. If you want to sit there and jump 1,000 times in a row, that's completely valid in order to level up your jumping. So it's just as silly as that. But instead of I've tried to min-max that. I've tried to do different things with it. But I'm just playing this, man. I'm just playing it. I'm just living that Morrowind life. That's what I'm doing right now.
Do you find that back on, with the older technology, are they successfully able to create a sense of place like you get with Skyrim? Because that's my favorite thing about Skyrim. It's a lot of what I like about Breath of the Wild. It's that when you're in that world, it really feels like a world. It feels like a big place with a lot of stuff in it, a lot of people, and you can go off and make your own pathway through it, and that's exciting. And it's kind of beautiful. Like there's a certain majesty because it's large, and you can see far off. Sounds like that might be a problem in Morrowind.
Yeah, that definitely does not exist. But I think they still do a good job of of making it feel like a kind of like a real place. And like, there's a lot of like, I find it very relaxing to play because there's a lot of exploration and the world, it's a little bit empty. You don't have the kind of thing, like I know with Skyrim, like you're kind of always on guard, even when you're walking around, because you might run into bandits, you might run into a bear, you might run into some saber-toothed tiger. There's always something, like there's just kind of that, you always have to be on guard and kind of watching what might attack you, even when you're just, you know, roaming around in your horse.
Just like this show.
Yes.
You never know who on the show might just attack you out of nowhere.
It's completely true. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that kind of thing, but it's not as, you're not constantly under pressure and it's very easy to avoid monsters. So whether or not you're in combat is more optional than some of the later games. But still, the world is large and, you know, you're really encouraged to kind of just get out and explore it. And, you know, it's very open-ended. You can just get out and you can go wherever you want. There's nothing stopping you from doing anything. And so I kind of have like more appreciation for the later games now that I've played Morrowind, because I can see that. And also the lore also. What really actually surprised me is the amount of lore where I can sit there in Morrowind and I can draw, I mean, direct, like, I mean, you can link the lore directly to Skyrim and a game that came out 15 years later. So it's very obvious that they had this whole thing mapped out for who knows, 20 years down the line. It's pretty crazy.
Even earlier than that, right? Because you've got Daggerfall and mm-hmm. I think there was a game before Daggerfall. So it's
there was
just
Arena.
Daggerfall is too. Yes.
Yeah. So it's impressive in terms of the lore, because I mean, I'm sitting there, I mean, even, you know, like, I've kind of toyed around with Elder Scrolls Online, and the town that you start off in Morrowind is the town that you start off in the Morrowind in Elder Scrolls Online. And what was interesting was the town looks roughly the same. So I start playing Morrowind and I'm like, wait a minute, this town's really familiar. And it's because literally the one that's in Elder Scrolls Online that was just released like last year, the town is laid out the same way. It's just the same town. So it's very crazy. You have this crazy sense of place, not so much from maybe the scope of the world, but from the breadth of games that have been released, and sort of it's just, you know, the fact that it's the same continuous world across multiple games. So
yeah.
It's impressive. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Yeah.
The only one I've ever played is Skyrim, and mm-hmm. I really do love it. I spent a lot of time with it. I talked about it on the show many years ago. But actually, maybe this would be a good point in the show for me to just stick in there, that I did recently get a PlayStation VR. And one of the main reasons I wanted to get it is Skyrim.
Yeah.
You know, I could play Skyrim in VR on my couch, which is definitely where I would want to do it, not, mm-hmm. you know, sitting in front of a computer at a desk, or standing for that matter, which I don't know if it does room scale with computer VR, but I don't have a expensive computer. I have a Surface, you know, Surface Pro. It was expensive at the time, but it's old now and it was never that powerful. So for me, VR on a computer is not really viable. But I have a PS4 and I really wanted to get the PSVR. I finally did. It's been coming down in price lately. And, Skyrim bundle in particular is a really good value. I think it's like now about $300 to get the headset and all the controllers and the camera and the game. So, and the game is really great. I really like the PSVR in general. It's worked very well for me, and it has a very good catalog of software. It's not ever going to be as immense as what you can get on the PC, but
right.
Sony has done a very good job of attracting development for this thing, and of getting a lot of the major games that, you know, that you can that you would want to play on a Vive or an Oculus. Skyrim is chief among those. I think it's amazing that they got Skyrim VR to run on the PS4. It honestly doesn't look amazing. It looks about like the Skyrim looked on the 360 when I played it 10 years ago. It's about that good. Mm-hmm. And which doesn't look very good by today's standards.
Yeah, that's probably good enough though.
It is, and it's hella 3D. You know, that's one of the things where I was really excited to try it, and it has totally paid off as a VR experience, in the sense that, yes, it is the entire game. You can do everything and go anywhere and play the entire story and every quest and all the DLC. It's the whole of Skyrim in virtual reality, which is mind-boggling, the scale of what they did to get this to work. The way it works is at times clunky, at times amusing in how complicated certain things are, but it works. And when you walk into a stream, you can dip your head down and look under the water, and everything looks and sounds different when you're looking down under the water. And that's really cool. But the best thing about it is that if you've never tried VR, obviously I recommend that you give it a shot whenever you get an opportunity to. But one of the things that is hard to appreciate about it, if you haven't tried it, and one of the things I find people don't really mention very often about virtual reality, is that it's 3D. The display is extremely 3D. It is a better 3D effect than you've probably ever seen with any other technology.
I mean, it's literally just doing what your eyes do. Which is why it's 3D.
There are these big 3D lenses right up close to your eyes, and they're showing completely different things depending. The image is basically being rendered twice, which is one reason that they have to run at really high frame rates. It's extremely 3D, and it looks great when it's well done. It's extremely well done. And Skyrim, the 3D effect, I mean, I would just liken it to, imagine if you could play Breath of the Wild in 3D. You know, the scale of that world and being able to distinguish in actual visual depth, or at least the illusion of it, that, you know, something could be as close to you as a tree that you're standing right next to, and as far away as Hyrule Castle, that's like, you know, the entire distance of the game away from you. You can really get that sense of depth when you look at it. And in a game like Skyrim, that is everything. The world is just absolutely magical. When you look around, every single thing you look at, you're going to want to go over and get a closer look at everything, because the way the game is just, it's already been laid out so that it has sight lines and it has interesting hills and valleys and buildings and animals and dragons, that there's all this stuff that is laid out to be near to you, you know, intermediate distance, and then very far away. And it's all a continuous part of the world. You can go do any of that. And so getting that sense of depth perception and scale of the world, and getting your bearings about you, it helps you navigate the world. It helps you appreciate the size and the distance between different places in the world. It helps you decide, you know, how far away is something? Do I want to go spend my time in that? It helps you route your way around mountains and through lakes and valleys. And it really greatly enhances the, not just the feeling, but I think the way you think about Skyrim and the way you think about what you're doing when you're playing the game, which, yeah, it's an RPG. So that's what you want. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, with Morrowind, like, what impressed me, you talked about putting your head underwater. And that made me think about something in Morrowind where...
Made me think about putting your head underwater.
That sounds creepy. Just bear with me here, folks.
You just need a good drowning.
But it did actually...
Breathe.
What impressed me about Morrowind was... and this is kind of random, but when you swim underwater and it's raining outside, the sound is actually correct. Which struck me, for a game that old, I was like, that's pretty... It's a detail. It's a subtle detail, but I was very impressed by that, because it sounds like when you're underwater and it's raining outside. It was just very, very impressive. So, and it's just, so even back then, they were kind of looking at making it that immersive, even with a game that old. So that was very impressive.
These games definitely have an element of simulation to them.
For sure.
There's a world being simulated here, and there's a lot of fun and there's a lot of intrigue in just going around and looking at the clockwork nature of it all. You know, I think the first time I ever appreciated that was probably Majora's Mask, and the idea that there's just all these characters and they have things that they do, and you can get in their way and you can meet with them and do stuff with them, or just leave them alone. You might never even meet them. And it gives the world of this feeling that it's alive and there's things happening and there's stuff happening even when you're not there. And Skyrim in particular is exceptional about that.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah, I can't wait for the next one. I don't know how long, how many more years that'll be, but...
You have to think that they may announce it this year.
They might. It's probably too soon for it to come out just because they... I think the same.
I mean, they announced three
Fallout
ports of it last year at their Bethesda E3. Right. I want to be drunk right now because this is terrible event.
It seems like they couldn't possibly milk Skyrim anymore. So
yeah,
at some
really
point they're going to need to release. A
I think we said
it
that like 3 years ago, yeah, though, and then they announced it yeah three times in one event. So
it's an all time great game, and I'd say I very strongly considered getting it on Switch last year, but that VR game. I figured the VR version was going to be bad. People at E3 said it was bad. It seemed too ambitious, too good to be true that they could really pull it off. And then when I found out that it's on PS4 and it ran well and it works and it's great and it's exciting and it's still all of Skyrim, I was like, oh, okay, that's going to be the way. The Switch version seems awesome. And if I didn't get PSVR, I would have gotten that instead. But yeah.
Yeah, I saw a guy on a plane actually. He was playing Skyrim on his Switch, and I was like, I was kind of jealous a little bit.
Yeah. It's a fantastic.
You could have bought it, John.
Yeah.
Fantastic. You could still buy it.
I still can.
Well, all you
there'll
had
be more planes,
was,
John.
All you had was Oblivion and your N-Gage.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing.
Oblivion is next. Once Morrowind's done, Oblivion is next.
Surely yes. Oblivion's not on N-Gage. I don't know how that could be true.
The Elder Scrolls Travels.
The
Elder
Shadow Key is okay. What you're thinking of, right?
I guess so. Must be.
Which may have only been for the QD. I can't remember.
Some kind of spin-off.
Also, why do I know this shit?
I don't know, James.
I don't know.
That's your personal problem to deal with.
Oh.
Was the N-Gage QD the one shaped like a quesadilla? Is that why I got the letters?
The QD was the one we'd have to take the battery out to change the game cartridge.
Instead of a taco, it's a quesadilla.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I feel like there's some industrial designers that worked on that product that might be the worst people at their job, at any job, ever. What if you had to remove the battery to change your game cartridge in your phone hybrid? I missed 2004.
What if you just didn't? I think that's what most people thought. What if I just didn't?
Look, I enjoyed my side-talking experience. What can I say?
When you've got the Elder Scrolls, the Shadow Key, and your N-Gage, you don't need anything else.
Right? That's true. It's the last game
forever.
You might want to play Mama Can I Mow the Lawn. I'm pretty sure that was on the N-Gage as well.
Yeah. When won't it be in your hands? Ready for a quick pickup session?
I don't feel like I have to answer that question. I feel like fate handled it for us.
You don't have to answer anything you don't feel comfortable with, James.
John, if that was the case, I would answer many less things on this show. All right, I have to ask, Johnny, have you dove into the more VR-ish experiences?
Like Polybius?
I was thinking more like virtual Rickality or the other one that they made.
I would very much like to do virtual Rickality. That's the Adult Swim thing. I saw some of it on Giant Bomb and thought it looked fantastic. It's very gamey. It's kind of a mini game collection, but
right.
Apparently it seems like the games that they run you through take quite a bit of skill and are firmly rooted in classic video game ideas, except now you're doing them in VR and also with a bunch of Rick and Morty jokes that are, I thought were pretty funny. I like that show. So, I definitely want to check that out, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. I have a pretty big VR library and it's almost all stuff that I got on dirt cheap sales over the holidays, some of which I bought before I had the headset. Cause I was
there
like,
you go.
I know I'm going to play Res Infinite for $5. Or whatever yeah. I paid, you know. So, I picked up quite a bit of stuff that was very cheap. And so I've messed around with a bunch. I beat Eagle Flight, which I think is pretty good, but fairly physically uncomfortable to play. Not because of motion sickness, but because my neck got tired. Because you play the entire game by tilting your head left and right. And sometimes very quickly to make very sharp turns. It's quite a difficult game. And I had to get a massage after I beat that game. I mean, my neck was really screwed up. Because the headset, it doesn't weigh nothing, and so slinging your head side to side to fly through these tiny rings in an underground subway tunnel at very high speed, it's quite stressful, both mentally and physically.
It's weird. I haven't seen any newspaper panic about this when Wii Tennis Elbow was such a.
Get that sort of attention, but. It's a serious consideration, but I did enjoy Eagle Flight. It's really fun. I really do like Polybius. It's a Jeff Minter game, so it's really psychedelic, really simple. Like it feels like a early 80s arcade game set in the virtual reality future, and it's quite faithful to that weirdo style, and it is blisteringly fast. It trumps Dyad for me. As probably my favorite you're not allowed to blink game. And it's really, really fun. And the 3D effect of being in VR, it makes a big difference with a game like that. And it makes you feel like you can see farther. Even though the resolution of the screen is fairly low, the 3D effect kind of makes you... I think you can get a sense of this in Star Fox on 3DS as well, but... You feel like you could almost be more accurate with your shots and with your movement because you can see into the screen so far. Maybe it's an illusion, but it's an effective one. And Polybius is insane. I definitely like that one a lot. I picked up the Wipeout collection that they added VR to. Again, I got this really cheap, even before they'd added the VR support, because I knew that I would want to see what that's like. And it works really well. It's very fun. The Wipeout game in VR is it feels very much like you're in an arcade cabinet. In the play area, what you see when you're playing it, the cockpit kind of comes up on the side and over the top of you, and then the whole thing sort of tilts in a way that reminds me of like the old Sega Afterburner arcade unit. There's something weird. It's a little clunky, but also really cool. Yeah, and Wipeout is like, I think Wipeout is not as good as Mario Kart and F-Zero and a lot of the other futuristic or arcadey racing games, but it's good enough, and there's a lot of it in the collection, and the VR support is pretty neat. So, yeah, that's probably most of the stuff I've been doing with it.
Cool.
Don't get a lot of time. When you I live with my girlfriend now, and we have this big dog, and it is challenging to find an appropriate time to completely shut out everything else and be in
virtual reality. Are you saying dogs don't respect the VR rules?
He can be quite amusing. Yeah, because he definitely...
Are you saying that you punch your dog a few times before
lesson? We haven't had too many problems like that, but he definitely will come over and he'll want to play with me or, climb up next to me or kiss me in the face while I'm wearing the headset. And you have no idea that he's there. The PSVR does not have a pass-through camera, so you're very much shut out, especially when you put the headphones in. It is tuning out of the real world pretty thoroughly, and that's not something I can do very often. But then there's other games that I can listen to podcasts or something while I play them. So it depends on the experience, Fun times, though. I love that VR is a thing you can just have in your living room, and it's, relatively... It's reasonably priced, I think, for what you get. So we finally got there, and it's a thing that you can own, and it works. To me, having it in the living room makes all the difference. I'm having a fun time with it.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for new business. When we come back, we will handle some slightly less harried listener mail. Stay tuned. Listener mail. You send it, we read it. Sometimes, even when that's a terrible idea. But you can send us yours to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. If we don't read it on the show because you've asked us about the sexual habits of Nintendo characters, it's because you've asked us about the sexual habits of Nintendo characters.
I will respond very politely from now on. I want people to know that. No F words here. No F words.
Since when? Anyway.
Since last episode.
Moving on with the briskness that is required, I will read one quick email because it requires no response from us. Jeremiah asks, with your powers of willing things into existence, you need to help get Twinkle Star Sprites onto Switch so I can undock and blow up people on the go. Needless to say, I have no shame being into a game called Twinkle Star Sprites. There we go. Done. Jeremiah, I know you asked us what games we have no shame of being into. We'll get to that some other time, but I wanted to give you our magic powers right out of the gate so we can help. We're helping people. But first, before we help anyone else, we have some emails. Some real emails. So, Johnny, guess, would you go ahead and read the email I've just pasted into the chat? There was some news today, and this email will cover some of that news.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's a long one. MASB writes, greetings, RFN Draft Day Revelers. Bombs dropped this morning. Kimishima out, Furukawa in. I try to keep track of the stuff, and I still didn't know who the new guy was until now. Once the handover is complete, Miyamoto and Shinya Takahashi will be the only in-house directors left from when Iwata passed away. A big change for only 3 years. The lovely Shibata-san is leaving Europe, becoming a director, and will be in charge of global advertising. Of the original three executive officers, Reggie is the only one to not receive a promotion. Has he reached his limit in such a Japanese company? Yes. Super Mario Sunshine continues to pay dividends for Koizumi as he and the brain behind Link's Awakening, Takashi Tezuka, are now on the board. I didn't know that was the most thing Tezuka is most famous for.
That's an interesting pull for Tezuka, but whatever.
Yeah, all right. There's something... Sorry, I probably ruined the sentiment. Sunshine continues to pay dividends for Koizumi, and Tezuka is the brain behind Link's Awakening. There's something beautiful about them being on the board. What are your thoughts on these developments and the impact on Nintendo's future? My only real coherent thought is that if you want to be the president of Nintendo, it pays to be in the corporate planning division. The last three came from there, after all. Your friend in Wasted Picks, MASB.
Tezuka, yeah. For reference, Tezuka is not exactly a young dude.
Right. Yeah,
he's knocking on 60.
Yeah, well, and Miyamoto is over 60, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Tezuka is most infamous to me. At least he's worked on a billion games, but to me, he's always going to be remembered for his role in the pushing of Miis, because he's the only human being who actually looks exactly like his Mii.
So yeah, big shakeup, brand new president of Nintendo, only the fourth or fifth ever.
At least the fifth, because Yamauchi, because we can go through four right now.
Right, right. But yeah, he's, I don't know much about Mr. Furukawa. Really hadn't read much about him before today's announcement. So he's a surprise. I think Kimishima was a surprise too. Like, we knew his name, but I don't think we knew very much about him, even though he ran Nintendo of America. So, and he kept a very low profile as the president of the company.
And that's kind of the thing that's happened with Furukawa as well. MASB notes that coming out of the corporate planning division, but the reality of the situation is, if you're not familiar with what corporate planning does, it's really about, as the name would imply, laying out the strategy for how the company is going to continue to grow and develop profits. Mm. So it's not a matter of being in that division is the way to move up. It's you're in that division because people think you are going to move up.
Yeah.
Like you get there because you've already proven you belong there. And so it's not particularly surprising that the people who have taken on the presidency of the company come out of that division, because that's where they would put you to continue to develop you. And to start leveraging what they think your talents are. And having read Mr. Furukawa's biography, like, it seems fairly impressive. Now, he is, as many, all of the write-ups have noted, the first president of the company to have grown up with the Famicom versus grown up making games on the Famicom. Or just being old enough to remember it being out. Because he is quite a bit younger.
Is Furukawa strictly a business guy, or does he have a development background?
He is a business guy, but I guess he's been involved in some stuff, but probably on the business side. Because there's not.
Yeah, he was there's in marketing.
There's a shockingly small amount written about him that predates today. Right. And that was kind of what I was looking for. I was looking for something that was older. Even what's been written about him now is really, really small. I mean, he was on the board of the Pokemon Company.
Mm-hmm.
Outside
director of the Pokemon Company, whatever yeah. that means. So
it means he doesn't work at the Pokemon Company, but held the title of director.
Exactly.
I mean, he's an office guy. Like it's mm-hmm. it's what it comes down to. I mean, he worked in Germany for a while. He's a corporate high riser.
Yeah.
I don't think he has really any history in games beyond perhaps being assigned to a project to run the business side of a game's development.
It'll be interesting to see if he shows up in some capacity at E3, because that'll tell us more. Is he going to be an Iwata style guy, you know, with some degree of personality, flamboyance, public presence, involvement in their biggest events? Or is he going to be more like a Kimishima guy where he, you know, he stays behind the scenes as he's done so far in his career, makes things happen, and lets other people sort of be the face and the voice and the, you know, the inspiration for what the company does. I mean, Iwata had a hand in crafting the very idea of the Switch and of the Wii U and, you know, of the 3DS. And so, certainly Nintendo's thinking about what comes after Switch. Obviously, and maybe most of the company isn't, but someone at his level definitely is. And yeah. I don't think we know enough about this guy to know what kind of creative input or strategic input he would have into that kind of decision. But he certainly has the capacity to, you know, radically change the fate of the company or the direction that they're going, or maybe he just sort of keeps the Switch right along the straight and narrow and runs it to the ground and then comes out with the Switch 2 or the Switch U.
he was involved in the marketing campaign for the Switch and developing it. It's not like he wasn't in a senior role before, so he would have been in those conversations in the lead up time. He does play video games apparently, and unlike, you know, I play video games. Apparently was noted that he is a fan of Golf Story. He is an international business, which even Kimishima has international business experience. I think in this case even more so. But the biggest takeaway I've been able to find beyond just like here's his CV that we've turned into a news article, is some comments from some Japanese language media people who say, like, I've talked to him. You walk away realizing this dude is super smart. Not much in the way of like he's got a personality or anything, but just he's really smart.
All right.
So well, I mean,
we shall see.
He's been around talking to members of the media for a bit now, but it was just his name was never such that like anybody ever bothered to translate those interviews.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's kind of is what it is. It's still a very, it's not quite a Kimishima situation where they had to put somebody who had experience in the role right now because there was an emergency. But it's also not so far out from that because ultimately they put a business person in there because if you look at everyone else that's in a director role for the most part, they're games people. Or they're hard people who have done hardware. And that's a healthy company can do that because they can rely on, you know, you have your chief executive whose job it is to, you know, be the ultimate decider. But they don't necessarily need to know everything about that industry they're in. They need to have the best people around them who can tell them what they need to know. And that list, the list of developers who currently sits on Nintendo's board, especially after this shakeup, is fucking impressive.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, and, you know, don't forget that, you know, Hiroshi Yamauchi had never played a game in his life, basically.
Right. And he made you play the game for him so he could decide if they were going to finish making it.
Yeah. So that's just being able to create a game yourself is not necessarily the be-all and end-all to being a good Nintendo CEO.
Oh, absolutely. No. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to suggest that there might be like good versus bad, but just rather, perhaps in the mold of someone who came before. Of course, it's also possible for Akawa might turn out to really just be his own, have his own take on the job and what it is. I think it's more likely that we won't really get much of a sense of what he does or how he does it for years to come. If he's been as private and you know, laid back as he has been up to this point, I bet that will continue.
Yeah, I mean, the quote from him in the Wall Street Journal is that Nintendo should focus on things that only we can provide. Otherwise, Nintendo would lose a reason to exist. So,
which is
it's a very safe comment, right? I mean, yes.
Is it? Here's the thing. It's
I mean, it's what you would expect. I would think. I mean, that is very much the company
corporate
line.
Message.
Yes, that's the company line.
Here's what I would say. Yes, it is Nintendo's. It's always been sort of Nintendo's ethos there, but like I don't think I've ever heard them say it that explicitly. Like, if we don't do that, we will stop existing. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't need to be there's no reason for us if we're not going to continue to do that. I think the wording of that is more interesting than the actual sentiment. The sentiment itself is not particularly that revolutionary. What's interesting to me though about the board changes is, I honestly thought they might be moving, if they were going to put a game person in, like, Koizumi's been getting a lot of fucking camera time lately.
Koizumi's my boy, basically.
Because he's been the... They would describe him as a key architect of the Switch. Like, he...
Yeah.
Sure.
He's been there. He's pushed a lot of franchises. He's done a lot of stuff for that company. Him making the board now is, like, one of those, like, yeah, this is a well-earned situation.
Mm-hmm. He was producer on also, the most popular game on the system.
Yeah, yes. I think he also brings that sort of like levity to things, you know?
He has camera presence.
Yes, and you know, like Iwata did. Iwata was very much the same way, where you kind of like this kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink, like, hey, yeah, these are video games and this is fun stuff, you know? So he's perfect.
I distinctly remember video of Koizumi at E3 the year they showed off Mario 3D Land running around with cat's paws and ears on his head in their booth.
Yeah, like you gotta love it, you know? I mean,
or the fucking ice cup thing during the Switch presentation. Oh god.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Koizumi was considered for this job.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was.
And maybe he was given the board position as sort of a consolation prize.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's entirely possible he's too valuable to be in that job. Mm-hmm. Like, because his role making
games. As a
games,
creative mind. Yeah, maybe so. Yeah.
I mean, he was involved in the architecture of the Switch. He got Mario out the same year as the Switch. He was, as you said, he was a producer on multiple games that are out on Switch. Like, he doesn't have the time. If you'd need to replace him with multiple people if you put him in a different role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably too much to ask. And that's another reason why you might not put a creative there, is that you limit their ability to continue to produce content for you that you can sell 10 million units of.
I wonder if he will stay in Tokyo, though. Like, I wonder if, you know, he's been running that Tokyo studio since Jungle Beat.
Yeah, the
Donkey
early
Kong
2000s.
Jungle Beat in 2000, that came out in 2005, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, 15 years he's been in Tokyo, and now that he's going to be on the board, I wonder if he will have to give up his role in Tokyo to come to the, I don't know. These things, you know, we don't know enough about how Nintendo works internally to really dig into it too much, but yeah, things are shaking.
There's no reason why he should have to. Most boards are comprised of people all over the country as it is.
Yeah, yeah, maybe so. Maybe that's just a meeting that they have once a month and he can stay in his studio head job, you know.
And just
keep making new Mario games. That's
just
pretty much all they do
in.
Now. Yeah.
Or just take that I mean, you could if you hate yourself, take that train up and back in the same day. It is a long train ride.
I feel like we've probably spent enough time on the Nintendo executive staff, but one thing I do want to mention before we move on is just that the shakeup is not really much of a surprise, because Kimishima was never going to be in that job long term. So he did years. He oversaw the critical time in the company's life, obviously, with launching the new Switch and it making it a success. So he deserves a lot of credit, and A lot of respect for the job he did. I assume he'll be retiring now.
He is stepping into a senior advisory role.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
he's
semi-retired.
68, right? So yeah. He was saying that, you know, he just basically couldn't travel anymore. It's an incredibly demanding job travel-wise, so.
Yeah. So, and he's probably owns a home in the Kyoto area, and he'll be in the meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's fine. You need people like that, especially if they're your business people, because they can continue to provide value, but they don't need to be there, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And if you're a CEO, that's a job that's never off.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
especially if you're the CEO of a multinational, like there's no downtime in that job. There's time where you're not in the office.
Yeah, there's no time when you're really not exactly. I mean, you can leave the office, but there's no time when people don't want to talk to you, literally around the clock.
Right. And there's no time where you can just go like, no, I'm not doing this right now.
Yeah.
It comes to turf. But that's the other advantage of bringing someone younger into that role, is they might have the ability to deal with that more, the more demanding part of running a massive company like that. You don't need to be to sleep as much when you're 30 years younger. I mean, it's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, exactly. Amen. Amen, right?
Yeah, there you go. But I mean, I would assume a lot of what he was doing up until that point was helping select and then ultimately prepare Furukawa to take over the role.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Which so, you know, I mean, that's probably his biggest contribution he'll make.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Kimishima. Thank you. Enjoy retirement or whatever it is.
Some other stuff to touch on real quick that came up. We're going to hear about the Nintendo Online stuff in May. Hey, it's going to finally happen. They've said ways to enhance the online experience, I believe was the phrase they used. Which is such a fucking nothing phrase, but maybe it doesn't mean we're going to lose online play. Who knows? They didn't use the phrase like pay for access to online play.
Yeah. I know they foretold that, you know, online gameplay was going to go behind a paywall at some point, but I feel the Switch is so well established at this point that it would be a mistake to take away features that people are already enjoying. And it's not that hard to think of
selling a billion copies.
Yeah. And it's not that hard to think of features that would be enticing and people would probably feel worthwhile. Especially at the, you know, if they stick to the price, which I still find it very odd that they announced the price so far in advance of launching the service.
Nothing of their announcements has made any sense.
Yeah, it's been a weird saga of this whole online network subscription plan. I'll be glad when it's over and it's out, and then we actually know what we're talking about, and then we can decide for ourselves whether
we do
it's
have
worth
a date
it.
Now.
Yeah,
September. In September, you will be able to pay to, quote, expand the online functionality of your Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, I think we knew that already.
What the fuck does that phrase even mean?
Yeah, maybe it means you can keep doing the things you've already done without paying, but if you want to expand your experience...
It just makes your internet wider.
we'll see.
Other things we learned, Splatoon still sells a lot of copies.
Mm.
Mario Kart 8 still sells way too many copies.
Mm-hmm.
Even something like ARMS continues to move units at almost 2 million at this point.
I mean, ARMS is a pretty good game, right?
It is, but
I don't have it, but I enjoyed what I've played of it.
It didn't really like the world on fire when it came out, obviously, compared to the other stuff that it was kind of in the same conversation with.
Yeah.
So people kind of thought like, oh, that one must not have done very well, but no, it sold a lot of copies. A bunch of indie games sold a lot of copies. There's still 3DS games coming out in 2019 because I don't know reasons. And then Nintendo acquired another portion of another smartphone development company, buying a share of Cygames, 5%, and announced a mobile game not based on a Nintendo franchise called Dragalia Lost, which we know very little about. The website for it just launched, but it's only in Japanese, and there's a video, but I can't watch it because I'm recording a podcast right now.
So this is a mobile game not developed by Nintendo.
Nope.
And not featuring any Nintendo properties.
Correct.
And it's not on a Nintendo hardware system. It's just coming out for phones.
Yes.
What about this exactly makes it a Nintendo game?
Presumably the money.
All right.
If you want to describe it, the money.
Mm.
And probably the co-branding. Because right now, the website itself for the Dragalia Lost, there is some video on here that doesn't require me to listen to it. It looks very chibi-ish. I mean, it is a Nintendo'd up website.
Do you get any sense of what the game is? What kind of game?
It appears to be an action RPG of some description.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
It looks kind of pretty. I don't know. But we'll see. I mean, we've talked about in the past that, you know, their mobile games, with the exception of Fire Emblem, which has made an ungodly amounts of money, have not necessarily been the most fruitful economic endeavors. In fact, one of them is already dead. But they're, you know, this is a game that is this explicitly. It is from a company who has made many successful mobile games. People who are freaking out of what does this mean with their other relationship they have with DNA. Apparently DNA also owns shares of this company. So this is some kind of weird cross investment strategy at this point. But this game looks cool. It looks like an overhead. I'm trying to think what a good example. Like the combat and I don't know that it plays this way, but it kind of looks like Fantasy Life when you're in combat, where it's kind of way overhead and there's monsters on screen and you're running at them and attacking them, and numbers just fly on the screen. But yeah, it seems like, largely speaking, Nintendo's involvement is they paid money to make it exist. I can't even tell who owns the trademarks to it, because the website's not super clear about that. It exists. I mean, there wasn't a lot of news. This is the investment briefing. So
yeah, I mean, other quick hits. I mean, sales-wise, Nintendo Switch has now sold 17.79 million units.
Over their estimate, but their estimate was conservative.
Yep. Nintendo 3DS has hit 72.53 million units. So
that's a 3DS family of systems.
Yeah, it really is. Yep.
We get to kill that phrase at some point, right? Or does it stick with us forever?
Family is forever, James.
Family is forever. Thank you, Dom.
Yep. Oh. I live my life a quarter of a 3DS at a time.
Gotta go fast.
What is that even? What is a quarter of a 3DS?
That's like the shitty D-pad at a time, pretty much.
A quarter of a DS. It's 75% of a DS, what you're telling me.
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. All right. So yeah, I mean not a whole lot of news beyond the corporate changes and the fact that Nintendo made a bunch of money. Their estimates for next year are that they will make more money. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, some people are saying the increase in forecast for how many Switches they're going to sell from like 15 million to 20 million. I think there's a sense that they are very confident about their lineup. And
yeah,
I would say they're probably very confident about the Switch in general. And I wouldn't read too much into that. It's probably just that their forecast wasn't optimistic enough before, so they revised it, because the Switch is a hit. And if they keep releasing good games, it'll continue to be a hit. But I don't think that means, oh my God, they definitely have to have Pokemon come out this year. Well, they've kind of already said that it might come out this year, so we'll see. But
well, and keep in mind, it's fiscal year too, so
yeah,
it could come out in March of next year and sell a million Switches in one day.
Stranger things have happened.
I mean, I honestly expect it could do that.
Yeah, sure.
Because if you're talking world, and they've been launching these Pokemon games worldwide lately. I mean, it's not super crazy to think that if you sell a bundle, here's a Switch with Pokemon in it, you'll sell a million of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, we really don't know what the lineup on Switch looks like right now. We don't know a lot about the first party lineup coming out. It's right before E3, so we're extra in the dark right now. Most of the things they've ever talked about are out. So it's a fun, exciting time. I think with the way the trajectory Switch is on, there will be a surprising amount of third-party support at E3 this year. Maybe not on the floor, but who knows? I don't even understand what's on the floor and what's not anymore. It doesn't make a lot. Like Microsoft isn't on the floor, so what?
Right.
I don't know what the hell is happening at E3, but certainly there will be a lot of third party support for the Switch, and yeah, Nintendo, they've certainly got the resources to announce some pretty big stuff, and I'm excited to see what it turns out to be.
We have Fire Emblem. We have Pokemon announced, even though they've not shown them. We've announced Smash Brothers, which they also haven't shown.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how confident they feel about how Labo is performing, which we have no idea at this point, it just came out.
Yeah.
Like, that may be enough for them. Plus the fact they have games that seem to sell forever. Mario Kart 8. Holy shit, Mario Kart 8.
I think we're going to see Metroid this year, or something about it.
Yeah, I would say so.
You'll see a logo with music that's actually from this game and not from another one.
Maybe so. And yeah, you know, it's been a long time since Retro Studios put a game out. We don't know what the hell they're doing, but it's been quite a while, and they've been hiring for years now. So I'm excited. We got to hear something from Retro this year. Got to.
Anyway, let's let's move on to the next email. I've just put it in the chat, so Guillaume, if you would please.
I would. Jay writes, "What's up, fellow Nintendo dorks? Nintendorks? Mm. I've been thinking, which is extremely...
have become self-effacing.
Yeah, so I've been thinking, which is exceedingly rare. Nintendo has recently stated that they want every family member to own a Switch. On the surface, this seems absurd. There's zero chance my parents would ever even think about buying Switches, let alone actually going through with it. But then it occurred to me, maybe Nintendo has incorporated their quality of life experiments into the Switch, and we just don't know it yet. We've already seen with Labo that Nintendo can surprise us with new ways to use the Switch. And we've also seen how something like Project Robot can be repurposed for the new console. Maybe the quality of life initiative will be the next thing to pop up in a new and unexpected way, something that will appeal to non-gamers. What do you think? Am I Nostradamus? Or just a dork with too much time on his hands? The safe money is on the latter. Keep up the good work, you decadent Philistines."
Nice.
I was going to ask about quality of life and like, do we know who thought that up? And have they moved up the ladder and Nintendo?
As far as we know, it was Iwata.
Yes.
I
think he's the only person who ever really talked about it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, he talked about it a lot relative to other people.
He also talked about the vitality sensor.
It did.
I think that was him on the stage back in those days.
So we also got an email from Leo who asked if the Labo Variety Pack was the quality of life, which I think at this point we just need quality of life to just be somebody come out, it's dead, and then walk off the stage so we can stop wondering about it.
Well, ideas are never dead at Nintendo. You know, Robot is a great example.
Exactly. But
we know the Switch itself and in its current form can't be the quality of life idea that Nintendo had a few years ago, because there's no microphone in the system to listen to you sleep.
Mm-hmm. That you know of. It wouldn't be very effective if you knew it was there.
It does have an infrared camera, though.
Yeah, it can watch you sleep in the dark. So that's almost as good.
It and me.
It can watch do lots of things in the dark.
Oh, John, your poor Switch. All right, so the one thing that I would say, and Nintendo may have been smart to pursue this line of business at one point, is that this is now a knife fight. Because the idea of like health-focused devices, especially as IoT has really just exploded to the point where it's become satire.
What's IoT?
Internet of Things.
Ah.
We made a joke on this show about an internet-connected diaper-changing station that I saw at one point, which seems like the worst product in the world. And I was encouraged that, no, it's a scale, too. And I'm like, but I have a scale.
Wait, what? So it weighs the baby's poop?
Like, it weighs the baby.
Like, uploads that to the cloud it. So you can, what, track your baby's weight over time? I guess? What?
Yes.
Like, how is that even, like, don't even get me started. That is just
Because the idea was that I can put the internet in anything now.
Exactly. That really doesn't add any value. It's just like, yes, we can store this data in the cloud. We can use your Wi-Fi connection to upload stuff is pretty much what that's telling me.
It's exactly what it's telling you. So the thing is, at some point, I think Nintendo realized that with all the major tech players all and the VC money that's basically just like, we'll fund fucking anything. I think they may have just said, you know what? This isn't a fight we want to have. Let's focus on something else. Because the reality of the situation is, unless they got really fucking lucky, and I mean really lucky, the likelihood that they would like launch the runaway hits in this space aren't super high. There's just too many players involved. There's too much money in this space right now to be hyper competitive in it. I mean, this is the kind of thing you could throw hundreds of millions of dollars at and not walk away with a hit. And Nintendo, for all of its war chest, isn't the kind of company who can afford to do that.
They don't tend to do that either.
Right. They're not Microsoft. You can say, we'll take a quarter of a billion dollar bet on something, and if it fails, oh well, we'll just sell Office for a few years and we'll be good.
Yeah, they probably missed the boat on that sort of thing, and without Iwata, I doubt Quality of Life has a champion, but I'm sure they have some internal concepts that they worked out that they'll open the drawer 5 years from now and say, oh, this makes sense on our new system, and fart out
or
something.
Like, this old idea meshes with this new idea.
Yeah, they're good about that. So
yep.
I wouldn't count it out. But
yeah, they're always long game focused. I mean, they're not in a hurry to necessarily do anything, and they don't chase trends either. So
go ahead.
Oh, well, I'm just kind of changing the subject, like, to like, in terms of chasing the non-gamer, how do we think that Nintendo can do that with a Switch? Because portable Skyrim is not going to reach those people, and so far Nintendo hasn't really shown any kind of interest in porting Wii games like Wii Sports or whatever to the Switch. So do we think that's coming, or
yeah,
is it something else completely?
I do think that's coming.
I think it depends on how you define a non-gamer. I would say a lot of the people who play Mario Kart probably don't define themselves as, quote, gamers.
Yeah,
well,
I would also say that I think the main thing with the Switch, the way they chase non-gamers, is simply by form factor. Because a lot of people that probably have gravitated away from gaming don't have the time to sit in front of a couch and play on a TV. They're out, around, they got kids, whatever. But if they can carry something with them or whatever, or maybe just have something sitting around that they can pick up and play without having to set aside time by themselves, you know, like that's one of the main things. So I don't know if any particular type of game or, you know, is going to necessarily go
because
after non-gamers.
Whatever game you make is likely already available, or some variant of it's available on mobile, right?
Yeah, it's more about the experience than the actual like game that you provide. It's like, and the Switch's experience is vastly different from PS4 or Xbox One, where you pretty much have to sit on a couch and you're staring at a TV. So, you know,
that's
Switch
not true.
Doesn't...
If you hardwire your PS4, you can play it in bad resolution on your laptop.
Or PSVR, I guess. Yeah, I mean, if you want to shout out the entire world and just, you know, whatever. But you
all the time, John, especially on Thursdays, starting at 9 p.m. until about midnight.
Exactly. Yeah. But you get my point.
Yeah, I think the challenge is always going to be, if the goal is let's go after non-gamers, I think that, unfortunately for Nintendo, is that that's a space that at this point they can't get on their devices, at least not in massive numbers. And so it doesn't feel like that's a priority of their mobile team either. Their mobile initiatives, I mean, like the one they announced today, is very, very game-centric. You know, maybe at some point they do start making more stuff like towards their... What did they call the Brain series? What did they call those games?
Touch Generation.
Touch Generation, yeah. Like, And the problem is, I don't think you could produce a touch generation game now, just because it's...
Everything is touch generation.
Pretty much. Like, the games, those games exist, a million clones of every touch generation game exist on the Apple iTunes store. Like, they just are. And so I don't know what you can do if you're them at this point. I think you just keep making games that have broad appeal, and you get people who don't call themselves gamers, but no, you're probably not going to get into the retirement center again. Mm. That was probably a one-time deal. But that's okay. Like, you can still be massively successful and tremendously profitable going after the fringe of what people would consider gaming, rather than just right down the middle core gaming audience.
I think there's a lot Nintendo could do with the multiplayer aspect of Switch. The built-in two-player mode is... I don't find that their first-party lineup takes advantage of it very well. You know, Mario Kart might be the best, but that game is a little hard to play split-screen on a Switch, which is kind of what you're asking people to do. Sure. Smash makes more sense. It's a single view for all players. So I'd like to see them figure out excuses to make you take your Switch with you and hand a controller to a stranger or someone that maybe you not a stranger, but someone that you wouldn't otherwise play games with. You know,
they run off with it.
But maybe like a coworker, someone that you see, you know, at the bus stop every day or something like that, you know, an acquaintance who might not be a gamer, but something on the Switch that would make you, it would really strongly encourage you to just keep sharing it with people. That seems like a good way to go, that it perfectly fits the form factor. You know, it perfectly shows people what the appeal of the system is. And I think they'll continue to refine the hardware itself. They'll make it, you know, a little tougher maybe. I could definitely see a smaller version of the Switch. I could see a sleeker version that, you know, people would feel more comfortable throwing in a bag, something like that.
Yeah, it's close. Like, it's just a bit too big right now.
One thing I've done occasionally is just take the Joy-Cons off and put the tablet part in one pocket and the Joy-Cons in another pocket. You know, that can be, and you know, that can work well in a laptop bag too, depending on it, as like a secondary thing to just put in a flap. You can make it work. But it's not something you would very casually just lug around with you all the time.
Yeah, I found that when I was traveling, it wasn't a problem. Like, it fit in my laptop bag without influencing the laptop, and I have a little case for it. But for just general day to day travel, it's kind of wonky to carry around. Mm-hmm. But
the Switch is kind of perfect, like, to throw in a purse though, or maybe if it was slightly smaller. I think it's something that they could definitely market to people who, you know, who carry handbags with them all the time.
If I have my messenger bag, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But that carries my laptop too. So it's like, if I have my laptop with me, then I have my Switch with me. Unless I'm at work. If you're listening at work, I don't have my Switch with me at work. just to be clear. Don't search my bag. It's not in there. But the reality of the situation is that I don't know that you could make it that much. I mean, I wrote a whole article about this, like with the Joy-Cons, like how do you make it smaller but keep the Joy-Cons? And God forbid, do they try to make those smaller? Those are already too.
I'd like for them to make those a little bigger, but
unless you just say like this is a Switch, it does not have Joy-Cons. It comes with Joy-Cons, but the controls are attached all the time. But yeah, whatever. The Switch actually can act kind of goofy if you take it out of the dock and you have the Joy-Cons on but try to play with the gamepad. I found a couple games freak out when you do that and don't know what control to use. It's really weird.
Usually they check by having you press the L and R buttons at the same time.
So but, yeah, the Switch will do it, and it'll say, oh, this is the primary controller. But then the game detects that it's got Joy-Cons docked on it. And goes, yeah. You want me to use these, right?
I've had some weird instances where I tried to change the controllers I was using through like the system menu, you know, and controllers, and then like connect new controllers. But then I had been using something else while connected, while docked, and yeah.
Yeah, it freaks out.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did want to touch on, because I kind of mentioned it as a joke, but now I'm not so sure. Like, Leo's question that the idea of something like the Labo Variety Pack being the, quote, non-wearable. And I don't think that was what Nintendo was ever hinting about, but I could kind of see it as, like, it's quality of life in that it's an education toy. And so if this is kind of where they were, this is one of, I mean, that was one of the things that they mentioned. Like, it's something that's educational, something that helps you sleep better. They felt like, it always felt like when they talked about quality of life that they didn't necessarily have a lot going yet, because they always talked in these sort of like vague generalities of a startup just looking for money. Like, it was like,
it's unfortunate
please
too.
Please partner because, with us. Yeah.
Well, like, if you think about it, Nintendo was already in the business of quality of life stuff. They put out a game about walking. They put out Wii Fit, a game about weighing yourself and doing yoga. And they had lots of stuff. There was a game where Flash Focus, where you trained your eyesight to be better. There's brain training. I mean, this is not a new concept, and it was never clear what quality of life, how it would be different than that whole initiative, other than maybe it seemed like the next stage in it. And they've since given it up, and Nintendo doesn't really make that kind of software anymore. Labo is the closest thing, and maybe it's the beginning of a return to that sort of stuff, which I'm totally cool with. I like all of those games. As long as they don't replace the other stuff Nintendo does, then I say bring it on.
I think ultimately it comes down to the reason they never really offered much clarity on that point is they probably didn't have it. Remember when they made these announcements, we were in the Wii U dark ages. They were probably trying to assuage investors that, no, it's not the end of the road. Like, we've got other things coming.
Yeah. We have other things in the hopper, right? Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this is around the time we had the mobile game announced. I mean, this is the Day the Music Died episode. these are the times we're talking about here. This is them announcing a console as just two letters, like, 3 years before they're willing to show the damn thing. This is the dark times. And it may be that as Switch started to develop and they started to feel more confident about what it was becoming, they realized that, no, we're going to be okay. This thing is going to do it for us. We don't have to pursue this other stuff with the same kind of verve as we were kind of selling, we were getting ready to. It's entirely possible this thing was just like, well, we're going to pursue it as part of a diversification strategy so our investors don't fucking panic. Which they did anyway, by the way. Because investors are good at that. They're really good at panicking.
They panicked because sales were bad and quality of life was nothing.
Right.
That's why they panicked. I would have panicked too if I was an investor at that time.
Oh, yeah. But investors will panic if sales are good.
Yeah, I think we're now back to the area where things are going really well. And so Nintendo, they don't really feel like they need to tell us a whole lot about what they've got in the works.
Right.
Which is, in some ways, is more fun as a fan, you know, to go into something like E3 where they're going to have games. Other than that, I don't have a lot of expectations, you know, and I'm okay because I know things are going to be fine. Right. I'm not worried about the viability of Nintendo as a company or the Switch as a platform. So things are okay. They're going to make more cool games, and I can't wait to see what they are.
Yeah. I mean, X got announced, what, 3 years before it came out? 2 got announced, what, like 6 months? Like, That's the psychological difference of where the company was at that moment. Like,
for sure,
they knew Switch was going to be successful because how they queued up their games. They knew at the very minimum they were going to be okay for this year. Whereas with the Wii U, they very soon after it launched, you could tell they did not have that certainty. The fear was real, and they reacted accordingly. Now, the idea, though, that Labo as an educational toy may have been something that they were thinking about at the time would be a little tough sell unless it was post-Switch's conceptualization, because it's so hinged on what the Switch is. Mm-hmm. But the idea that they may have been like trying to think about, okay, what can we do to go after the so-called creator generation? What can we do that is engaging and lets people learn and grow? And what can we do to get after that lucrative edutainment technology market? I could totally see that there was a team spun up doing that at some point, and that some of those ideas fed into this thing
for sure. But I mean, it also leverages something that Nintendo's been messing with for the past several years, which is, you know, like game creation tools and tinkering things. Like, go back to the WarioWare DIY. I see a lot of that interface, you know, the editor in what Labo does, and Mario Maker too. So even Smash Brothers had some fun tools like that. So I think that will continue. Be nice to see Labo sort of embrace some kind of sharing portal for mods and videos of people's mods, you know, something, even if it was curated by Nintendo. It'd be nice to see that stuff within the games so that, you know, you can be inspired and then you're right there and you can get going on it.
But I mean, ultimately it seems like Twitter's been doing that for them.
Yeah.
Like it's my feed was pretty blown up on Saturday, pretty much throughout the day. I did like though, that if you search the hashtag for the Japanese, katakana writing of Labo, you got people's hands and then their faces very clearly never on camera, like deliberately avoiding it, showing like the cool thing they've made. And then if you just search for Nintendo Labo hashtag, you got the quote unquote influencers making a crazy face holding cardboard boxes. It was like the most depressing jump cut I've ever gone through on Twitter, which is impressive. Like, this is a website designed to make you feel bad, and like it delivered in that one moment. Technology's the worst. We should just get rid of it.
I think if Twitter makes you feel bad, you should follow different accounts.
Twitter's
not designed to make you feel bad. You're just bad at
Twitter
using
it. Twitter is a psychological tool.
Yeah.
Oh. It doesn't matter who you follow. All that matters is what someone likes. Oh, well. All right. Well, where are we at? I think that's going to do it for us today. Obviously, a lot of stuff came out, and as we see more news out of the announcements, we might get some more idea where things are going to go. Maybe as they have the Q&A session comes out, we might get some new tidbits worth discussing. But we'll have to do that next week because it didn't happen.
By next week, you might know what the online service is.
That's right.
Details coming in early May.
Or maybe they'll delay it, and we'll find out later. Who knows? This is the online service. This is Schrodinger's online service. Is it pay to play or isn't it?
Nobody Do you knows. Get Virtual Console or don't you?
That's right. What is Virtual Console?
Mm.
Are we all Virtual Console? Anyway.
Ask Billy Mitchell.
You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and we won't kick you out of Twin Galaxies. But if you ask us crazy bullshit, we might not read it, or we might read it and shame you. Well, you know, I'm willing to move on to public shaming as a response to emails that deserve it. So
we publicly shame ourselves every week on this podcast.
Every week. I mean, that's what the show is.
Yep.
There's also a good chance that if you write something good, we won't read it on the air because we've been doing pretty poorly at going through these very quickly. So, but we've got a backlog now. So
it's true.
Yeah, don't write to RFN at
no. Don't fucking for fuck's sake, Guillaume. We're gonna get back to having this Mario fuck as the emails.
He was trying reverse psychology.
It doesn't work. We've tried that before.
Like, that's the thing. What if Yoshi eats Kirby though? That's the thing I want to know.
God damn it, John.
Like, what if? I was just thinking that the other day. It's just strangely a coincidental that you might bring that up. But
he's gonna shit out a pink egg.
Yeah.
Do you? But what if Kirby eats Yoshi while Yoshi's eating Kirby?
I think it might eat the whole universe.
John, I think you need to get that tattooed on your chest. Yoshi eating Kirby eating Yoshi.
I think we can test this scenario in the new Smash Brothers.
Well, I mean, you have to give me some credit. I mean, it would be a tramp stamp.
I think Yoshi has frame advantage, so in that case, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to write in and yell at me that Kirby has frame advantage. But here's the thing. I don't care. But again, you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Johnny, I want to thank you for joining us this week. What have you been up to?
Working.
Okay, perfect.
Living life. Living
Launching
life.
Rockets, son.
Nothing to plug?
Rockets launching right over me, Johnny.
Let's see. I am still appearing on Box Office Poison. We just went monthly, so you don't get quite as much movie chat as you used to, but I'm happy to still plug it. I'm still having fun with those guys, with Carl and John, and we have some guests. And we'll be talking about Avengers Infinity War on the next episode. And also, I think Carl's movie of the month is Batman Mask of the Phantasm, the animated movie that got a theatrical release back in the 90s. So, yeah, we're having fun over there. Come check it out.
Cool.
Use your movie pass. You can keep up with us.
Oh, God, I forgot about movie pass.
Yeah.
Can you still get that?
I just signed up for it. I have yet to use it. I'm excited for it, though.
I hope they killed it because they realized the economics don't make any sense.
I figure I got to take advantage while I still can.
There you go. Well, because Greg is not here to pick the music, I have decided to pick the music. And in honor of nothing in particular besides the fact that I sent this email to Greg almost a year ago to the day asking for us to use one of these five songs, none of which have been used, Greg. I'm just going to pick one from the list because you can't stop me. So I have decided to pick from Atlas's Trauma Team, a jazzy piano slash electric organ theme called A Hero's Limits. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Farewell.
Later. Later.
That was, like, apprehensive.